Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 40 of the Fitness Canner podcast. I am joined today by PJ Nessler, and we got linked up through the Strength Performance Network through article writing and sharing articles. So it's a little different podcast because I've never really spoken to someone who dealt with mostly combat sports like MMA, jiu-jitsu, and a few other MMA-based sports. So I think it's a different perspective because that sports is so hot right now, and a lot of people kind of jump into it maybe thinking that it's all about just the striking or groundwork, and there's a lot more that goes into it. So, PJ, thanks for joining us tonight, man. I know you had a really busy day, so I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thanks very much for having me, Eric.
Absolutely. So you do a little more than just the MMA. You work with football players, getting them ready for the NFL Combine and hockey as well. But primarily, you're dealing with mostly fighters, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I don't really work. I've worked with NFL players and NHL guys in the off season, but now with my business role, you know, running multiple facilities, I have to kind of my training had to take a little bit of a back seat. So I really had to focus, and I've got a couple groups of combat athletes that I work with, and those are the only athletes that I currently work with that I'm actually hands-on with.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got into the industry.
Okay. You know, I got started probably like a lot of us, always into fitness from the time I was 12. I didn't really know where I wanted to go with it. Ended up going to college for business. Hated every second of it. And actually transferred to the University of Rhode Island and played football my sophomore year when I transferred. And that's when I was introduced into real strength and conditioning. And, you know, I saw that there was a route that you could go that was really cool, that I was really interested in. And immediately I just fell in love with it. You know, working with my strength and conditioning coach there, I switched over my major and just really started, you know, that was 2005. And then since then was just, all full speed ahead towards strength and conditioning. So I started doing some internships. I had a mentor who was my high school football coach that came in my senior year, who was also a strength and conditioning coach. And he helped kind of guide me along the way, told me what certifications to take. I did some internships with him, but I really was just getting into any opportunity I could to get on the floor, work with athletes, be around people who were doing it. So, you know, I was lucky that by the time I graduated, I had about three or four volunteer internships, one at the collegiate level at my school, and then a few others at private facilities, as well as two paid positions, one running high school speed agility camps in the summer with my high school coach, and then another at a private Parisi Speed School performance facility. So I had a good amount of hands-on experience by the time I graduated college.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, and then I ended up actually working at the Parisi Speed School when I graduated in the private sector, but I was all about collegiate strength and conditioning at the time, and I got a call from my old strength and conditioning coach that I had worked under as a volunteer intern offering me a position at the University of Rhode Island just as a paid intern, but I jumped at it, moved back up to Rhode Island and worked there, you know, pretty much making negative money. You know, I was paying more in rent and expenses than I was making at the time. So, but I knew I had to get into collegiate strength and conditioning. It was a great foot in the door, and I ended up working my way up there really quickly. Became the assistant strength and conditioning coach there, and the director took a leave of absence. So I ended up, myself and the other assistant, ended up running the entire Division I strength and conditioning department as a person with 1 year in the industry. So,
oh my God,
definitely a crazy experience. And looking back, I made a lot of big mistakes, but I learned a lot through that opportunity. But
sure. So did you, before you did that, what sports were you in charge of at Rhode Island, or was it kind of the gauntlet? You took care of everybody that came in?
Yeah, we had all of them. So okay. I was primarily responsible. I think I had anywhere from probably about 10 teams. We had 18 varsity sports, but we had two strength and conditioning coaches on staff, plus sometimes a grad assistant. So we basically worked with all the teams together. You know, the bigger teams, football, baseball, men's track, some of the larger teams, we would all three coaches would be there. And then I wrote programs for and coached by myself, men's and women's soccer, women's volleyball, rowing, cross country, men's and women's track, pretty much all the teams. We had 18 varsity sports, and we, you know, between the two of us. So we were there 5 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. And
oh
we had
my
a,
gosh.
Our weight room was a weight room was an old classroom. So we were only able to get one team, and so the bigger teams, we were only able to get like a third of the team in there at a time. So there was no way to be more efficient with our time. We had to get every team in there from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. It was a crazy experience.
Oh God, how resourceful were you guys?
Yeah, you know, you learn very quickly how to be resourceful with minimal. We had four racks, you know, a set of dumbbells. So when I finally moved in the private sector and started coaching smaller groups, you know, I was at the Velocity Sports Performance out in Southern California. It was a 20,000 square foot facility. We had every piece of equipment you could imagine. And it was like, you know, crazy for me writing programs for three people in a 20,000 square foot facility compared to writing programs for 80 guys in a, you know, maybe 5,000 square foot, not even, probably maybe 2,500 to 3,000 square foot weight room.
Yeah, that's insane. But you know, that kind of, I mean, and you touched on it too, that it kind of builds you a little bit, right? I mean, you look back on that and now it's like, I mean, you get anything above that size and you're probably in heaven.
Absolutely. Yeah. I tell everybody I've been very blessed to have a very difficult road through my career.
Yeah.
Some big challenges, some things that just didn't work out the way they were supposed to. And I kind of got the short end of the stick a few times. You know, when I first went to Rhode Island, I was supposed to be a paid intern. So I was making $750 a month.
Right.
And I was supposed to be working 20 to 25 hours a week so that I could get another part-time job and pay my bills. But because there was so much issues going on in the strength and conditioning department, I ended up getting treated like I was an assistant. So I was there 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. So, you know, again, looking at it early on, I was like, this isn't fair. I'm being overworked. But when an opportunity presented itself for an assistant strength coach, I was ready to jump into that role because I was already doing the job.
Yeah, I think you get, especially as a young person getting into it, you're probably thinking, you know, I'm definitely not getting paid for this. Well, then you realize that really even the people who are full-time, they aren't getting paid what they should get paid to be there that long.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's...
Right, you bet.
So it's almost like you're, in a way, it was, you were blessed to have that extra, you know, 12 hours a week or, you know, however many hours a week that you could just because they basically forced you to it. I mean, that kind of grew you to what you're doing now. So I cut you off about your trip to California. So let's pick up there.
Yeah. So I'm from California originally, and I always wanted to get back out to California. I love Southern California. The weather, just the lifestyle is something I've always connected with.
Stop rubbing it in. Stop rubbing it in. I'm in the Midwest.
It was just,
it's terrible here.
Yeah. It's actually crazy. It's pretty warm in New Jersey, where I went to high school. All over the country right now, it's warmer than it is even here in Southern California. But I've always wanted to get out here, and you know, I saw an opportunity. Actually, the other assistant I was working with saw something on the Strength Performance Network for a private gym that had all MMA fighters and everything all over its website, and just looked really cool. And he said, "This looks right up your alley." And I applied for it. My mom was actually out here visiting because she's from here visiting her family, and I sent her into the facility to check it out, and she ended up talking to the performance director for me and doing a little mini interview to help me get the job. But I ended up moving across the country. I left my Division I strength and conditioning job just to take an entry-level training job because I knew I wanted to be out here and I knew I wanted the opportunity to work with fighters. And I thought maybe I wanted to get back into collegiate strength and conditioning, but I wasn't sure. So I just took a leap of faith. I moved out here and I knew once I was here, I could start working my way up and networking and doing, I was confident in my abilities. So I just took the leap and slowly, slowly, gradually worked my way up through a couple of facilities, working with all kinds of athletes. And I trained when I moved out here, I was running the youth speed agility classes and the adult boot camp classes. And that's pretty much all I was doing. And again, I was looking at it as, man, I left a Division I strength and conditioning job for this.
Right.
And, you know, I was only getting paid for 3 hours a day that I was running these classes. So it was a big challenge, but I just kept trying to find the opportunity there to prove myself and take on every opportunity I could. And I finally got promoted to the sports performance director. And then I started working with a lot more elite athletes, and we ended up merging companies a few times and bounced all our company kind of bounced all over the place. I've been with the same company the whole time, but it's changed ownership a few times. And every time our company changed ownership, I started working my way up into more and more management positions, which is something that I turned out to really, really enjoy. You know, my big passion outside of training athletes is working with coaches and teaching coaches how to do what I do with athletes. And that's become my true passion. And that's really where I spend about 75% of my time these days, is teaching and training coaches and trainers on how to train clients or athletes, or, you know, the best methods and principles and things that I've done in the 10 years of my career and had success with.
Yeah. 'Cause we kind of talked about that a little bit last week before we hopped on the call, and about how important it was that people learn not only from someone who's doing it, but from your or a person's mistakes. You know, if the only thing that we talk about is just how successful we are and how great we're doing and how much we're helping our clients and all of the right things that we do, then we're kind of doing a disservice to the people underneath us that are coming up behind us, because then it's going to be like, well, Coach Nessler didn't say anything, or, you know, my trainer, Eric, he didn't tell, or, you know, my whatever, whoever's above you teaching you, they lied to me. They said it was going to be all, you know, rainbow and sunshine. But if you come at it from a point of, here are the steps that I took, here's where I failed, and here's how you can avoid that, and maybe not all the way, but, you know, take some cues from someone who's been there and done that. And that, it sounded like you are developing a pretty cool program around that, if you want to share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely agree. You know, I was actually just listening to a Tony Robbins podcast this morning, and he was talking about exactly that. When people want to share their successes all the time, but we really learn the most from shared failures. And I think it helps to humanize you as well and let people understand, you know, it's very easy to look at, you know, I look at some of my biggest mentors and it's like, man, these guys just seem to be doing everything right. And everything they say, they seem to have it all figured out, but I can't be that way. You know, he's just got the best mindset and the best situation. So I think it's really good to share in the struggles and the failures that you've had. And I mean, that's what I did from the beginning, because I didn't really have a lot of formal training, a lot of formal mentors, or, you know, all the facilities I was working for didn't have a set curriculum. And I was always somebody looking for structure and organization and a way to put methodologies together and piece things all together as an organized platform. And I just never had that. So I was searching for it everywhere I went. And all of a sudden I had to start training people. You know, I became the director and I had to hire coaches, and I had to teach those coaches how to do what we were doing. So the best way I knew how was I just started systemizing what I do day to day and how I train athletes and some of the successes I've had and things that work really well. But really what I started teaching them was, hey, okay, here's all the stuff that I've done and where I screwed up, and it cost me a lot of time and effort and wasted time. So here's a better way to do it. And I just started sharing those practices. And I've been doing that now for 5.5 years since I've been here. And over the past 5.5 years, I've just kind of developed it into a curriculum for internships and coaches development to help them see what these major mistakes were that I made in my career, or major mistakes I've seen other professionals make, and how they can circumvent those and, you know, help them to have more success. And it's been great, because I've got coaches working for me right now that, man, they are light years ahead of where I was when I was 23, 24, you know, 27. It wasn't until I was probably 28 where I really was able to start piecing these things together and making sense of everything. You know, I just felt lost until then. And I look at some of the coaches I have now, and I'm like, I can't wait to see what these people are doing when they're my age, because they're so far ahead of me. And not taking any credit from them, because they're all very smart and hardworking individuals. But, you know, I like to think that I can help shape that path a little bit and help expedite their learning curve, for sure.
Definitely. And I tell people who are going into the personal training industry, and it's probably similar, if you're building a clientele, and if you have a practice in place, you have a philosophy in place, and you're surrounded by others who are going to help you build up that philosophy and help you fine tune it. If you're putting people through a program that you know that works, that's a fail safe, it's going to keep somebody safe, and they're going to see progress, and they're going to end up believing in you and what you're doing. That's great. But if you don't have people behind you telling you, look, like for instance, I tell some trainers that are at the gym that I'm in now, like, look, man, you got to put it in grind, because if I look back at my book, I keep a book of all my active clients, obviously, and all my inactive clients. And if I look at that, I've got a book of 47 active clients. I probably have three times the people over the past 10 years, if not more, that I no longer train. It doesn't happen overnight. And
Right.
when people look at, trainers look at me and they're like, holy cow, they do the math and you're like, you've got to be kidding me. And it's like, no, man, but you get that one or two clients, and I know it's a little different in the world you're working in, but you get those one or two clients and you really focus on them, and the ones that kind of fall off to the side for whatever reason, whatever, I have no ill will towards those people who I don't work with anymore. In fact, if they come back, of course I want to help them, but it's just the point of you have to have somebody behind you saying, keep your head down, keep grinding, do what you know how to do and do it really, really well and be the best you can at it. And everything else will take care of itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that.
So how are your coaches, how are they dealing with the program that you're putting together? Like what's some of the feedback that you're getting from them?
I mean, my coaches are phenomenal. So the thing that I've tried to do the most is I try to develop such a team atmosphere that, I've worked for so many people, and you know it, we're in the industry of egos. And there's so much ego in this industry, and I've always been somebody who just craved knowledge and information and to have some significance and an impact. I wanted to be able to use what I was learning and add value to whatever I was doing. I didn't want to just, be a pawn and do nothing. I always wanted to bring more value to my boss or the company. So one of the things, and again, that's why I talk about blessings in disguise. I've learned so much from some of the very challenging and difficult bosses that I've worked for, and some just, overall not great people that I've worked for. And I
Yeah.
think it's shaped me into being the kind of manager and leader and boss that I really take pride in being today. But my coaches, really what I try to do is help them by setting a framework that they can then build upon, and then create a team environment where, some of these coaches are so good at what they do. They're so smart. They've got so many different, so much, di such different backgrounds that, we just redid our entire movement training methodology. And really, myself and one of our other coaches set the framework for how we were going to conceptualize movement. And then we had weekly meetings where we just kind of brainstormed and put things together. And the stuff that these guys came up with was way better than what I could have come up with on my own. And we created it as a team. So it really creates a unique culture. And the buy-in is excellent, because they're the ones who created it and they're the ones implementing it. I don't coach the regular athletes who are in our programs. So it helps me a lot to, again, use my experience to help develop the framework and guide them down that path. And let them use their day-to-day hands-on experience to figure out what's really going to work for the middle school athletes that they work with every day, because I don't work with them anymore. So
Right.
it's a lot harder for me to keep my finger on the pulse of what those athletes need and what's working for them.
And another good thing is that when you have a team like that around you and you totally trust in them, like it sounds like you do, you know that they're going to pass on that knowledge to the next people that you hire or the next people that they interact with, right? So you're not like keeping all of that knowledge and information to yourself, because that's all spreading the knowledge, like you're doing podcasts and training other trainers and things like that, just talking about ideas in general, even with it's like a someone who you know is in direct competition with you, who might be trying to get a client that you're after also or something like that. If you're open with that person and you're talking about methodology and things like that, it's only bettering the industry. Otherwise, we'd probably still be lifting trees and just like our it'd still be archaic. I mean, the things that we do are, it progresses so quickly, but I think it does that because people keep talking and where we have open conversation and dialogue. And if that's not, if we're, I think I've said this like 1,000 times on the podcast, but you know, if we have all this information and we don't share it, then what's the point? What, are we going to die with it? And then who cares after that, right? I mean, if you find out something new, you might as well tell somebody else. It's only going to help another human being.
Exactly. And you made so many great points there. And that's why I love what you're doing. You know, you're spreading good information with this podcast. And it's just so important to connect people. And like you said, for me personally, I mean, the reason I tell my coaches that, you know, now I kind of step back and that this internship we're running right now, this quarter, I'm not really running it at all. I've got a performance director in one facility and an assistant director in the other facility, and they're taking the lead on the whole internship, and coaches are taking part in it. And I tell them that, number one, my knowledge on all these training subjects has increased exponentially when I had to start actually teaching it to coaches versus just doing it to athletes. So you're going to learn a ton from having to teach this.
Right.
Number two, you know, you're going to get a ton of value from teaching these interns because they're now going to look to you as mentors, and you can build that in your career. But, you know, like you said, we're helping to raise the bar. You know, that's kind of the underlying premise behind everything I'm trying to do with my online education business. You know, I say that my mission statement is to raise the bar for fitness professionals. And, you know, whether it's by setting new standards of professionalism and helping people to understand that we are true professionals and we need to look and act like it.
Right.
Or by just providing as much information as possible, because, you know, you can't take it with you. And if you have that kind of scarcity mindset that you're keeping it all closed off to yourself, you know, those people are rarely successful. You know, they'll get to a certain point, but, you know, I think our industry could be so much further. You know, there's so much information out there, but, you know, we're very quick to keep things to ourselves and in competition with each other and break each other down in terms of other coaches that are doing great work just because it's not exactly what we're doing or we're jealous of them. The funny thing, I met with two other local strength coaches who work with MMA fighters that are within maybe 5 miles of me, one of them right around the corner. So obviously very competitive market there. And one of them is a very experienced guy who's a good friend of mine, and we've worked together on some projects. And the other one is working with his first MMA fighter, and he's a younger coach, but he's doing an excellent job. And he reaches out to me for advice and support. And he comes down, and I just, you know, the fighter he's working with could very well be a person that I'm trying to work with. But, you know, there's plenty of fighters out there. And I know that for every one fighter who's working with a coach who's doing some really good stuff, you know, there's 500 other fighters that are working with some trainers who have no idea what they're doing.
Yep.
So, you know, we came down, we had a meeting yesterday morning, and we just shared ideas for 2.5 hours, and it was awesome. And, you know, I'm just giving away everything I have. And I think that having that kind of abundance mindset also helps you grow, because if I'm giving you everything I have, then I have to go learn more. You know, I can't just sit back and go, I've learned the 5 best things and I'm going to keep these to myself. You know, I'll give you all 5 of them and then I'm going to go learn 5 more next week so that I can keep growing and keep progressing myself as well.
Yeah. I mean, our tool belt is endless, especially if we open up the dialogue and conversation to other people that are in the industry that we may not see day to day. But if I could reach out to somebody and say, hey, is there a way that you'd train somebody, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If there's expertise, like if a fighter came to me and wanted to train, there's two things I could do with him. I know for sure. Strength training, because that's what I feel like I'm an expert at. Basic strength training, progression, periodization. After that, tell you the truth, I'm kind of at a loss because, you know, I don't train fighters. But if I have somebody, let's say like you or a member of your team or something like that to reach out to, I mean, that's a win-win for the whole community. So I think going back to your program, you know, to not keep that inside, it's just like an in-house thing that everybody comes on board to your place and you just say, okay, everybody has to go through this curriculum, but to share it and let other people get value from it. That's pretty awesome. And I think it's such a cool time to be in our industry too, into any industry, you know, obviously. I mean, we look down on our phone and we can, Google and find anything that we want. So it's kind of like a, it's great and it's kind of a bad thing at the same time, because then you have people out there who just regurgitate things that they see with no practice. And
Right.
it obviously, we put out material because we want people to learn from it. It kind of it takes away from all the hard work that you put into it when you see somebody who's never really been there and done that, maybe copycat or maybe shut down something that you know that works because they maybe don't like your attitude, or you're not as big as them, or whatever the case is. There's like really good and bad things about being in our time. And like, okay, for instance, like this po like podcast, not just this podcast, but podcasts in general, like Tony Robbins' podcast, all the podcasts that I listen to, it's incredible. But you can always go out there and find something that might make you maybe second guess what you're doing or something like that. So it's like finding the things that really back you and knowing that you're doing the right things and you keep moving forward. It's just like surrounding yourself with the right people. You surround yourself with the right technology, and it's all syncing up. That's a really long way of saying that you're doing a really good job.
Well, thank you. And I agree. I think the podcast world has brought so much value to our industry, any industry, but our industry in particular, because that's the industry that we work in. But podcasts and online education, and there's so many resources at people's fingertips. And the great part about it is there's so many great coaches out there that are now accessible. I reach out to guys that, guys who've become friends of mine now that I used to read their blogs and watch their videos and just think like, man, these guys are so awesome. And like you said, you go train a special forces guy who was reaching out to me asking questions about training programs. I've never worked with special operators. So for me, I'd have to go, 10 years ago, I just make them up a program and we do basic stuff because that's what I know how to do. But now with, I've got so many experts at my fingertips that are working with these type of people and have this experience, and so many people are open. You can send an Instagram message and say, "Hey, coach," some big time coach, and most of the time these people will take the time to get back to you and have a 15-minute conversation and help you and guide you, which is awesome. And but like you said, the just because it's on the internet means it's true. Anybody with a blog can be writing an article now. And a friend of mine, Brett Bartholomew, and I were talking a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about exposure versus experience. And just being exposed to something, if I read the book and now I want to go write a blog post about how important it is, that doesn't really make me an expert in it. I haven't taken that exposure and put it into practice and actually used it. And he had a great analogy for the difference between somebody who's spent 500 hours in a flight simulator and someone who's spent 500 hours actually flying planes. Which one of those pilots are going to want to be in your plane in the cockpit when things start to go wrong?
Yeah,
So that's
thank
the
you.
difference between just being exposed to some of these elements and then actually getting out there and doing it in real life scenarios.
Yeah, and you said it
So.
way better than I. I tried to say the exact same thing, but that's a way
Well,
better.
I can't take credit for that. That's Brett had a post about that, and I just, really. Sometimes you find those coaches that just speak the way that you think and it just clicks. And Breck's one of those guys for me. He's a super smart coach and very experienced. And every time I see something, I'm like, man, he's taking exactly what I'm thinking and putting it into a very nice package. So,
The whole Twitter and Instagram and all of that, I mean, that's basically how what I'm doing now with the podcast, that's basically how it's growing. If somebody likes a post that I put up and I like what they're doing, that's all I do. I just say, hey, let's spread the word of what you're doing, and then they shoot me an email and then we're off to the races. I mean, it's amazing the amount of love that you get when you just want to add value to somebody else's work. And that's what it's all about. 'Cause we know that the work that you do, and all of your coaches do, it's great to get accolades and have somebody say, hey, you did a great job with that athlete. But when you see the athlete perform because they put in the work that you helped them with, I mean, that I think would mean more to a coach. I know it means that to me. Like somebody today said, hey, I just want you to know that I was at a market the other day and I picked up this I don't know how heavy it was, but she kind of gave me a size and she picked it up and was able to put it and hoist it over her trunk and into her car. And she's like, you know, if I wasn't doing this, more than likely I wouldn't be able to do something like that. And it's just like, I don't even need to hear that, but just to know it, that that person's life, it's different now. I mean, that's kind of what makes it worth it. And I can only imagine it's the same for you and, you know, your athletes performing well.
Absolutely. You know, when you hear that stuff, and sometimes it's not the world championships that, you know, that's exciting, that's cool. But, you know, a particular example for me, I have a jiu-jitsu fighter that I work with who's very much just a recreational athlete. You know, she's not fighting in the UFC, but she's a very hard worker. I've been working with her for probably 6 months or, you know, maybe even more than that. And she went with her husband to Thailand. He's a professional Muay Thai fighter, and she
Wow.
trains Muay Thai as well. And she, when she came to me, she was so banged up. She always had different injuries, and it was just really bothering her. She didn't seem to have as much confidence because of all these injuries that had been bothering her. She sent me a text message. She went to Thailand for about a month, and she was just sent me a text just saying thank you because of the work that we've done. You know, she was able to go with her husband and train Muay Thai 6 days a week for a couple weeks out there and you know, have the trip that she wanted to have. And she didn't fight, you know, she just went and trained. But it was so fulfilling and rewarding to me because I was like, man, you know, that's why we do this, you know, that having that kind of impact in somebody's life and being able to allow them to do what they want to do longer or better is just, you know, it's fulfilling. And the same thing for coaches now. And that's why I love the trainer education so much. And, you know, when I started putting out videos, I used to do on my Instagram, just take pictures of my athletes here and there. And, you know, here's professional athletes I was training. It was more kind of celebrating stuff because I didn't really know how to use it. And then I just started doing videos, you know, hey, here's an exercise I use and how I teach it. And I just got such good feedback on that. And my following started really growing because I was just providing value. I just was giving people the exercises I use and my methodologies and anything and everything I could possibly teach via Instagram or Facebook. You know, I shifted more to Facebook now because the videos are longer, but the more I could just put out there, the more feedback I was getting, and started teaching some workshops and seminars. And, you know, I'll have trainers from a seminar that I taught, you know, did some seminars over at Equinox, and I talked to some of the trainers, and she said, you know, that hip mobility drill that you taught us in the squat seminar, I did that with one of my clients, and that's the only thing he said he's ever done that has made his hips actually feel good when he's moving around. I was like, man, that's it. You know, that's why I do this. That's why I love sharing this stuff, because I know people are going to get value. And if you can deliver something that's going to help them, and then they can go help their 20 clients or their 30 clients, it's going to be just a much larger impact. So it's awesome.
And I don't want people to think that we sit there when somebody says something like that and we're like, yes, look how awesome we are. I helped this person become amazing. It's not like that at all. It's a point of like, holy cow, I made an impact in somebody's life. You know, that's what's rewarding to us. I mean, it's not like we're patting ourselves on the back, but we're just like, it just makes us feel so good. I mean, it makes all of the hours that we put in and then all the effort that our athletes or our clients put in or outside the gym and all that comes to fruition. And then they say something about it. Even though you might be seeing it every single day, you know they're moving better, you know they're striking better, you know the ground game's getting better. But then when they tell you, I know what's happening, I can see what's going on with my body and how I'm performing and looking and feeling, then when once they get it, that's a big turning point. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, we're such a small part of that. You know, I never can take any credit. Combat sports are so, there's so many variables that go into winning an MMA fight. I can't take any credit for what I do, but just to be able to help, you know, if I can provide something that just helps a little bit, even if you just were able to do a little bit more, or you just felt a little bit better going in, whatever you can do, you know, it just, like you said, I mean, that's why we do it. We're in the people business, and we're in the business of helping people. And it's very rewarding when you can share an experience, or and especially because we're taking, for every one thing that clicks and really helps, we tried 200 others that didn't work.
Right.
So, you know, it's not that every methodology we do is just great. It's like, hey, let me share 20 things. And, you know, I do a workshop and I'm like, let me share 20 things that have worked for me for some people. And one or two of these might click with one of you or one of your people. And just, again, maybe I can provide just a little extra tool for your toolbox.
Yep.
You know, you're the one who's got to be the master who can apply the right tool for the job. But if I can give you one or two more tools for your toolbox, then, you know, maybe that can help one of your clients a little bit more.
Absolutely. That's, I've heard that same, the same term, and I use it too, our toolbox, because you're right. There's not one thing that's going to work for every single person. You have to build a toolbox. And that's something that every coach, every trainer that I talk to, they always mention their toolbox and sharing tools with other people. And then hopefully they can use it down the road too. So that really speak, that's like an industry, that's across the entire industry. Everybody has a toolbox and everybody kind of shares and passes along different information to everybody because we are so different. But
yeah, and it's a great analogy because
you know,
if you're a carpenter, no two jobs are going to be exactly the same.
Right.
But if you've got a huge toolbox and you know how to use all of those tools really well and when to apply the right one, you know, then you're going to have a much greater value to all the different clients that you work with. So,
yep.
You know, and then that's the struggle you see with a lot of people early on in the industry is, you know, the kettlebell is the tool that they find and love, or the,
right.
or Olympic weightlifting or whatever it is. And this is it. That's the tool. You know, we're all guilty of it. We all find that one thing that just clicks and feels good and works for us. And then, you know, fall in love with it. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like the end of the analogy, they say, when you give somebody a hammer, everything tends to look like a nail. So
right.
very quickly they want to apply that thing, and that, you know, all of a sudden kettlebells are the best thing for no matter what your issue is or what your goal is, kettlebell is the thing, or Olympic weightlifting is the thing. So, you know, the more you can show people that that's a great tool, but it's one of many, and we can start to build that toolbox up. And then, you know, I think a real master coach is somebody who has a very vast toolbox,
yep.
but knows which ones are the go-tos, you know, most of the time that are going to get the biggest bang for your buck, and then where I can apply all of these other little tools to get the job done more efficiently.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's a mic drop comment. So
I love the analogies. I'm all about analogies.
No, well, I mean, they work. They, especially in our industry, man, there's so many of them, as you know, there's just, it could go on forever. And it kind of, you kind of brought everything full circle, because without, you can carry a toolbox around. This is not going to be a good analogy, so I shouldn't even start it out that way, but you could have, like, in your toolbox, I mean, where do you get your tools from? Right. I mean, you can find a couple things that you learn yourself that you know that works for you, and you try to share people. But if I don't come to PJ and ask for how to work with somebody, then I don't have any tools. So we kind of just went full circle with it. You know, it's just the sharing method. Just share and be open
yeah.
and tell people what works, but more importantly, tell them what doesn't work. I mean, that's going to lead
exactly.
to success. Just be open and be
yeah,
honest.
They can throw some of those things out. And like you said, you know, when they see the tools, it's very hard if, you know, we're just going to keep going analogy after analogy, but I could give you some crazy Swiss Army knife, but if you don't know how to use it and apply it, it's just a shiny tool in there. And that's, unfortunately, that's part of the problem with the internet
yeah.
and with all this stuff, is people just see things and it becomes kind of monkey see, monkey do. Like, oh, that's a cool exercise, I'm going to do that. And that's one of the big things I try to share is, hey, here's how to do the exercise the right way. So at the minimum, if that's all you take, at least you know how to do it the right way.
Right.
But more importantly, here's why I'm using it with my clients right now. Here's where it fits into their program. Here's why it applies to the female fighters I work with, but I've changed it a little bit for some of the guys. And here's where we're using it, so that, again, instead of me just handing you this, you know, crazy Swiss Army knife, now I'm showing you all the features and when to use them and how to use them more efficiently. So you're not just, you know, taking it and poking and prodding with it and hoping that something works out.
Yeah, exactly. That's another really good analogy. That's all day.
I'm going to have to write these down.
I know. Don't worry. It's being recorded. So I got your back.
Oh, yeah, good. Perfect. Perfect. Well, we've got a lot of good analogies we're coming up with here.
Yeah. Well, hey, PJ, I really appreciate you spreading the word about what you're doing, and it sounds like you're building something great over there. So if people want to reach out and get a hold of you, how can they do that?
So the best way to get in touch with me right now is on my Facebook. I'm on Facebook at Coach PJ Nessler, and I pretty much I'm rebuilding my website right now. So I've got a website that'll be launched very soon, which is CoachPJNessler.com.
Okay.
And that will be the hub for everything. But right now, my Facebook is really the hub for all my videos, all my content, seminars I've got coming up. You can reach out to me via Facebook message on there. So that's the best platform. But people can shoot me an email directly, too, if they want to. PJ@CoachPJNessler.com is my direct email. So, you know, I love talking to trainers and sharing as much information. But, you know, I post stuff regularly, pretty much every day on my Facebook to just get that content out there.
Awesome. All right, people, you heard it. If you have any questions, get a hold of him via Facebook and keep a lookout for his new website. Again, PJ, I appreciate you taking the time, man. A lot of good info.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.